Good evening, Stephen. We had England and Scotland's final group games this evening. I, of course, watched Scotland. Which game did you watch?
Unfortunately, I watched the England game.
Okay, give us your thoughts on England. I saw that Sancho didn't start yet again. Did he go off the bench in the end?
No, I don't think so. It's kind of weird. Towards the end, there was kind of zoning out of the game because it was really dull. It was like if you've watched the first two games, it's kind of dull. I think the England games have probably been the worst to watch in the whole tournament. Just nothing happens.
Yeah, I agree with that,
And
yeah, for
then
sure.
basically, after 25 minutes in this game, England didn't have another shot in the whole game. And from about the 30th minute onwards, neither team had a shot until right at the end, where David Luiz lookalike for Croatia hammered one over the bar from like 35 yards, and that was it. Nothing happened. It was that's what happened.
What can you take? I mean, we have been pretty critical of England on the show, in terms of the team selection, certainly Southgate. What can you take tactically from what you saw of them so far? Is there much to be derived from their group performances? I kind of feel like going into the knockout stages, teams, for example, like the Dutch, maybe looking a little bit overrated at the moment, and England might be looking a little bit underrated is the wrong word because they've not exactly shown much, but it's at the end of the day, it's a group stage where the big teams just need to get through and face off against each other. So as much energy you can expend save for them is obviously of benefit. Is there really much you can take from England's displays versus some of the other bigger teams?
Yeah, I mean, basically, if you look at tournaments in the past, pragmatic teams do well because if your aim when you go out on the pitch is not to lose in a league, that's a problem because you're going to drop points if you're drawing lots of games. But in a cup competition, it means teams have to beat you to get past you. And if teams can't beat England, then they're not going to get past them. And I guess that's the whole game plan, but it's just really hard to watch. And I think that I understand the frustration if you're an England fan because you look at the players available and you think there's a lot of talented players there and you should be doing a lot better, but they just aren't. And I guess Southgate's game plan probably comes down to he doesn't really have any attacking patterns of play to progress the ball, and they just look to progress it either through long balls to Kane or just edging it up the pitch, taking no risk. And
Yeah.
then once you get into the final third, get it to one of the better players and see if they can just make something happen. And it kind of worked tonight at the start of the game. Like they tried to play it out from the back and it wasn't working. And there was one point where I remember Shaw gave away a foul right at the edge of the box. And I was just thinking that's not a good sign. And then a similar thing happened with Calvin Phillips at the other side of the pitch. Sort of received the ball but didn't know what was behind him and almost got caught on it, like near the edge of his box. And it's you can see that they're not the struggle when they play it out from the back. But then Saka dropped deep for the first goal. He just collected it, turned, ran the length of the pitch, and the goal basically came from the second phase of that attack. And you sort of see the idea is basically it's basically just to get the ball into the final third and then something will happen. And if you've got players like Saka and Foden and Mount and Grealish and Sancho all in your squad, they can make something happen. So you can't just rule them out. But
Yeah.
it's just really boring to watch. If you could compare it to like pretty much all the other big teams in the tournament, and they're just really, really hard to watch. You kind of suffer through the games.
It's a curious thing for me that a lot of the big teams over the years, certainly at international level, have tried to build a system around the strengths of the players available. And Southgate seems to have done the opposite in this case, and he's built a system probably post 2018 World Cup, he's built a system that he wants to go with, which is slightly less gung-ho. And even as even more attacking talent comes through and comes to the fore, like Foden. And I mean, you forget, like, since the last World Cup, Sancho, Foden, Grealish have all came to the fore. Do you know what I mean? But yet we're just ignoring their existence in a lot of ways. Granted, Foden started the first two games, but the team hasn't exactly built around providing him with what he needs. It just seems curious that in the face of the obvious attacking options available, they continue to stay quite rigid. And I guess we'll see what happens. But I mean, there's not really much more to say about England, I don't think, certainly after that performance.
Yeah.
as of Scotland, just not good enough in the end, I guess. I think the England Scotland performance is more of an indictment of England than anything else. Like, we have been outplayed and outmuscled in both of the matches against the Czechs and certainly Croatia. Luka Modric looked $1 million tonight. He looked 24 rather than a decade older than that. And but we allowed him to do it. Like Luka Modric could play when he's 45 if he's going to be allowed the space to play like that. Do you know what I mean? It's not an age thing for him. The guy's peerless and timeless. It's about having the opportunity to do it with being closed down or the tactics being put in place to stifle you. And we definitely missed Gilmore in that regard, because the three central midfielders, none of them want to do that, and none of them want to go and do the dirty work. Like Armstrong and McGregor in particular, they're not tacklers. They're not guys who are, certainly in McGregor's case, not a good tackler. Like, they're not guys who are going to hassle and get in and win the ball back in places where they should. And in the case of McGinn seems to go through fits and starts of games. He's like unbelievable energy, bursts of energy, but then he'll kind of back off for 5-10 minutes. And I don't think that's a coincidence. I think if he played like that for 90 minutes, he'd be injured half the season. So it's like you've got to take those things into account. And Gilmore's presence in there would have made a difference. Would we have won the game? Absolutely not. Like, Croatia played us off the park in every aspect of the game. Do I think Croatia are a good side? No. I think we made them look good. I think we made the Czechs look good. The only team that we didn't make look good was England. And it's a kind of frustrating, weird tournament to emerge from it, because realistically, we've not been here in quite a long time. And a group stage where we didn't really disgrace ourselves is probably enough for now. I know a lot of people will be clambering to say, oh, we've got the players to do more than that. But you need to move things slowly but surely. Like, people who watch Scotland play Kazakhstan less than 2 years ago, I might add. That game is 2019, and we lost 3-0 on a plastic pitch to a team who haven't won a game since. If you'd have told me that we'd have competed at any level in a tournament with a team like Croatia, I would have taken it. So we have to be realistic here and say we've taken strides forward with a group of players who didn't look capable of doing anything like this less than 2 years ago, man. It's September 2019 we're talking about, that Kazakhstan game. So I think we have to be realistic here, and I think Gilmore's 20, the young lad that came on, Patterson, I thought in a little 10-minute cameo at fullback did really well. He's got massive potential to be that option in the right wing, which, frankly, we haven't had from O'Donnell during the tournament. I just think he's a weak option on that side. As much as Clark wanted to defend his defensive displays, I don't think he gave us anything whatsoever. Nothing. Negligible, actually. Negative XG, you might say, from the right-hand side tonight. And once Croatia got their game plan sorted and knew that Tierney and Robertson were going to switch from left centre-back to left wing-back to give each other a rest and a break, they just overloaded that side of the pitch and made sure that neither of them could get forward in the ways they wanted to, because they knew we had nothing, absolutely nothing on the other flank. So it didn't matter how quickly you shifted the ball over. O'Donnell was just returning it inside again, and then the ball was just being recycled all around the unit again. And that's easy to defend against. It really is. So, yeah, on reflection, a good tournament to be in. I enjoyed it very much, and let's see what we can do going to the World Cup now, because we have got promise coming through, and I'd rather focus on the positives rather than the negatives of feeling a bit crestfallen, considering the things that have went in our favour during this tournament that meant tonight was a win or bust. So, I mean, what's your thoughts on Scotland in general?
Well, I can't really be very critical of Scotland. I don't like the comparison to Northern Ireland, but it's I watch Northern Ireland all the time, so I rarely watch Scotland, obviously. But they at least have a game plan. I was looking before the match, and all their outfield players, bar O'Donnell, are 28 years old or under, and their goalkeeper's the only player over the age of 30 in the whole squad, I think, their goalkeepers. And they led the competition in accurate crosses, long balls, they were like fourth in shots. So the things they're doing are generating shots. And that's the first goal, I guess, in football. If you're going to win matches, you have to have a process for generating shots.
That's the interesting. That's the interesting thing. Just to cut you off there, mate. Sorry, very quickly. Sure. Like, under Strachan and under Craig Levein, previous coaches, I've watched the metronomic passing around the possession, back and forward, and not any penetration whatsoever. Not getting in the box or creating chances to even miss them. And that to me is a step forward in this tournament. We did miss. We missed one or two good chances again tonight. And the Scotland that I've watched for at least the five, six years. Strachan's era, and then before that with Levein, we didn't create anywhere near enough, even against the very bad teams. So that to me is a step forward. That,
yeah,
I agree with you. There's a game plan, and it's creating opportunities in the final third.
Yeah, exactly. Ultimately, if you're not creating chances, you're not going to score goals. And Scotland have a process for creating chances, and a lot of people don't like it because it falls under the same thing as Sam Allardyce or Tony Pulis or whoever, those people who get the ball into the final third as quick as possible by launching it at someone like Dykes, get the ball down in the final third, get it wide, and then get it into the box. But it works. If you don't have the quality of players like an Italy or a France or any of those sort of big sides, you need to find another way of getting the ball into good goal-scoring positions, and Scotland did that. And that's your first aim. And they've also been solid at the back. Like, they've conceded goals, but they haven't been opened up too much. I know we talked about XG and we've talked about its limitations, but ultimately, like, Scotland led in XG in the first game. And all that means is they created good chances and should have scored goals, but yeah, they didn't have a finisher. And tonight, they led Croatia in XG again. It doesn't matter. It doesn't count for anything. But it means they created chances and could have got a goal or two goals. And also, it means that they were probably a bit unlucky in the goals they scored. Like, Modric is a world-class player. And that second goal he scored, it reminded me a bit of Ronaldinho's goal against Chelsea.
Yeah, but it's, a while, but yeah.
It's just one of those where, like, that's what happens when you play against players that are just that good. Like, you give them a tiny bit of space, that's going to happen. But ultimately, like, Croatia didn't create big chances. They just had good players and scored goals.
Yeah.
And that's the difference in international football, is having good players. I can't criticize Scotland. They're on a path. It's not an ugly path to watch, probably. Sorry, it's not a pretty path to sort of look at, but it'll pay dividends for them. Like, if they do this in the qualifiers, they should get enough points to get through the groups again, get into the World Cup, get into the next Euros, and they have young players coming through that are good. So you can't really criticize it. It's like, you have to taper your expectations based on the players they have, and at the moment they don't have any like Kenny Dalglish level player really, so you have to work with what you have.
Exactly. Yeah, I completely agree. Were there some things that I would change based on what Clark did? Absolutely, but it's very easy to say that in hindsight. Anyway, I think we've given Scotland enough of an inch in this pod. What about the Dutch? So I've got quite a lot of close Dutch friends. I asked them this morning if they were getting excited, and it's not like the Dutch to get excited about pretty much anything. The Dutch have got a weird level of arrogance where when they are good, it's even when they're playing good, it's, we should be so much better than this because of the players we've got, right? And then it's when they're bad, it's like, well, we don't expect anything of these players because they're not good enough to play for the Netherlands. Do you know what I mean? There doesn't seem to be any halfway house. I kind of feel this team is kind of edging into that halfway house where De Boer is kind of stumbling across some good ideas and good tactical things here with the likes of De Jong. De Jong's been the midfielder of the tournament, in my opinion, so far. I think he's been absolutely unbelievable. In fact, if anybody's watched Barcelona for the past 5 months, De Jong's been one of the best players in the world. Honestly, just absolutely sensational stuff. And that's obviously allowed Wijnaldum become some kind of incredible playmaker. Do I think that they are all of a sudden one of the best teams in the tournament? No. Do I think that they are hugely susceptible at the back? Yes. Do I think that Denzel Dumfries is probably one of the most overrated players in the tournament so far in terms of what he's capable of doing against a good team? I think so. And not to have a dig at the Eredivisie, but if you're still in that division at the age of 25, but you've been in the national team for 3 or 4 years, questions have got to be asked about your ability to step up. There has to be a reason why all the scouts that have came to see you haven't bothered. Do you know what I mean? So I think, given what I said about the Dutch, like, they are massively pessimistic, but I think the Dutch are actually better than the national pessimism at the moment, but not as good as the general fan would say that they've seen of them in this tournament. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I always like watching the Dutch in major tournaments. They're pretty much a team I always look out for and watch all their matches, no matter what. I thought it was interesting that they dropped Wout Weghorst and played Malin for this game. Because from what I gathered, a lot of fans were saying they wanted Malin to get a chance. And he has a lot of pace, and pace scars defences. And he got in behind a few times and it caused problems and goals came from it. But the interesting thing for me in the first goal was he made like the worst possible run you could make there. Like, you're 2-on-1 against a defender, and he ran with the ball towards his own player.
He did, yeah.
It didn't make any sense to me. I was watching it thinking, what are you doing? This isn't going to work. And then they scored, and I was like, all right, okay, it worked. And it's just maybe one of those things where, like, maybe against a better side, they defend that situation, because yeah, they're not going to let you do the worst possible choice and get away with it. And maybe it's just a case of Mellon's performance came against the weakest side probably in the whole competition. But he did look really good. He was very direct, very positive. His pace just terrifies defences. He had lots of good touches in there in the box, and it made a big difference. But I think Wout Weghorst is one of those sort of underrated players. He's a very intelligent forward and sort of links everything together quite well. Makes a lot of good movement to create space for people, but it'll be interesting to see which one of the two De Boer goes with next.
Yeah, I think it would depend on the opposition. I think, and also, this is going to sound absolutely sacrilegious, but maybe the best option is Malin and Weghorst. Like, Depay. I like Depay a lot, but I think Depay can be very wasteful in possession sometimes. I think his decision making could be better. I don't think he's a natural finisher by any stretch. I just wonder. I mean, he's never going to do that in a million years. I mean, De Boer has set this team up around Depay since he took the job, so it's just never going to happen. But it would be interesting to see just for 20 minutes or something if he went with those two up front against a good opposition. How it would throw a spanner in the works rather than going up with a bit more of a conventional approach.
Yeah, I mean, from watching Depay for a few years now, I've always preferred him when he takes more of a playmaking role in the team, because he's a very clever player. He has good vision, and he sees the right choices to make. But when he's the guy on the receiving end, he tends to make a lot of the wrong choices, and that's always very confusing to me, because it doesn't make a lot of sense. But maybe it's just one of those things, like his attacking instincts aren't as honed, I guess, maybe, as his playmaking instincts. But I always prefer him when I see him sort of playing more as like a 10. Someone in front of him making those runs.
He set up he played the ball through for Malin for that second goal against the Austrians last week. And he played it and timed it to perfection, right into Malin's path. And Malin was very unselfish, squaring it to Dumfries to score. So he's excellent at that. But because of Wijnaldum's emergence, is that extra midfielder that can go forward but also pretty much be everywhere. I mean, there wouldn't be a team of the group stages so far without Wijnaldum in it, I don't think. Just because he's shown everybody a completely different side to his game, getting in the box. And I mean, I don't even think PSG were buying that kind of dynamism. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's, it was a kind of completely other side to his game that maybe quite clearly tactically he wasn't really being pushed to release too much from Klopp just by the way he plays. But I was really, really, I've been really, really impressed with him so far. And with guys like that, supremely on form, like Wijnaldum and De Jong cannot be more on form than they are right now. These are guys at the absolute top of their game. So as much as the Dutch might be vulnerable and stuff, you cannot write off a team that got guys playing at that level of quality at the moment. So I don't know who they're lined up to get next. Do you know, is it somebody from Group F, or
I'm not quite sure. It's one of the third place teams once they work out where the cards lie on those teams.
Right.
But they're the third game, I guess, in the knockout rounds. And against one of the, I think they're against the third place team, I think.
Okay. Well, it's really going to depend who they get in terms of if they get further. But I mean, I wouldn't write them off. They're not the best team, nothing they've really done surprised me so far. And it was quite a weak group on reflection. Like Ukraine looked really good and they were very easy on the eye, but not really much substance behind it, certainly defensively. I don't really think many people want to see another Austria game, but they might not have to if they've drawn Italy anyway. So, and Macedonia did well for the size of the nation they are and for the quality of player they've got. So, yeah. On reflection, it was one of the easier groups. Let's look at the other games. What was the other game yesterday? I can't even remember.
we had Belgium.
That's right, versus... sorry, yeah, Belgium at night, yeah. My only comment on that game is if Romelu Lukaku stops me from cashing in my top goal scorer bet because his toenail was offside, I'm not going to be very happy about it at the end of the tournament, I've got to say.
Here's the thing on that, right? He is offside. That's by the law of if the furthest part of his body is closest to the goal than the defender, then he's offside. But no one wants that to be offside. That's the thing. It's like I made a comment on Twitter. We should probably be using the center of mass for the forward or the midpoint, maybe like from where their navel is. Because if you take that, then you give them the advantage of if they're pointing, then their arm isn't offside, or if they're running, their toe isn't offside. You know, no one wants that. And that's the thing. It's like I think if you change the way it's measured so that the attacker has a bit of leeway and the advantage, it would give them maybe like a 30 centimeter advantage or something. I mean, that would be better. That's what everyone wants. It used to be that they used to say, like, you want to see daylight between the attacker and the defender. And it's like, now it's like, his toe's offside.
I've wrote about it previously till I'm blue in the face. Like, this is the first offside rule change that has led to a regression for the attacking player ever in history. It's the first time it's ever happened. And people getting so excited about Ben Chilwell celebrating in the last minute of the FA Cup final, only for the goal to be chopped off by VAR. I mean, if that's really how you want your football to be decided, then I think you should just get back to the spreadsheets or worry about something else, because that's just not football. That's not why we're doing this. It's built for attacking play, and the offside rule had a place, and it still does, and it's been absolutely annihilated. And even in even Macedonia's goal early in that game, he's barely offside as well. Like, we're talking half a boot offside there in that game. You're not allowing forwards to time their runs anymore, because how can they possibly time it to within a quarter of an inch? It's impossible. It's just an absolute bastardization of the rule. And people who like this kind of thing, they probably want to be referees themselves. They probably like that officiousness in their lives. It's a total nonsense. But anyway, Belgium got the result in the end. Not particularly convincing, but Hazard did look a little better. What about De Bruyne? De Bruyne showed some nice touches. One interesting thing I would say on De Bruyne, mate, is I saw a lot of it from Modric tonight as well. And again, it's something that's been across their entire careers. I don't think I've seen Luka Modric in this tournament hit the ball with inside of his foot, including that one he spun in the top corner. Every single flick into the forward's feet or out wide is with the outside of the boot. And we know why that is. It's because the natural arc of the ball takes it away from the defender and brings it back down into the your own player's feet. Whereas if you're using the inside of your foot, the natural curve of the ball takes it closer to the defender. And Modric mastered it tonight, but De Bruyne did quite a lot of it last night, in particular when he was guiding the ball onto the feet of Lukaku. And that's certainly something that De Bruyne and Lukaku seem to have worked on as a combination.
Yeah, the only comment I would make on Belgium from watching him, I love De Bruyne, he's brilliant. And he was head and shoulders above everyone on the pitch. And that includes Hazard. Hazard looks like a shadow of the player we remember in the Premier League, and he's had injuries and things, and that's understandable, but he just doesn't look the same player. But De Bruyne is just world class, and the only problem I had with his performance was Alex Witzel wasn't holding in midfield. There was times last night where he was getting into the box and De Bruyne would be out wide about to put the ball in, and I was thinking, who's in midfield? And there wasn't anybody, and when you've got three centre backs, you can probably manage those situations against a team like Finland and against a forward like Pukki. But my worry would be Belgium haven't really been tested against a really top side here. And if they vacate midfield against better teams, they're going to get punished. Yeah. You just cannot do that against a good side. And it happened so many times. There was one point, like, it was in the second half, and it was they were 2-0 ahead, and they just need to see the game out. And both of them were just caught ahead of the ball, and Finland were just running down the the Belgian defence. And I was thinking, this is madness. All you need to do is just see out this game.
Yep.
And now you're having to run 90 yards to try and stop a counterattack that shouldn't have happened. It just, that was the only thing that really bothered me about the whole game, I guess.
Well, the only decent team they played is Denmark, and Denmark should at least have taken a point off them. I mean, you're talking about two outstanding goals, one assist, one goal from De Bruyne that ultimately decided that game. So we're running out of time, mates. We'll jump on to the last game, which was Denmark against Russia. Sensational atmosphere in Copenhagen for that one. Really emotional atmosphere too. I don't think anybody would begrudge Denmark their place in the last 16 after what's happened so far in this tournament. And weirdly, after everything that's happened, to kind of get through via the back door in that last game, they are the team that's probably carrying the most momentum out of those second and third place teams the second place teams to go and really do some damage, because a lot of people thought they would do well. It hasn't really worked out, but they still got through anyway. They could be a team to watch, I think.
Yeah, I was so happy for Denmark. I think everybody in this tournament is quietly a Denmark fan, or at least their second team. They're rooting for Denmark, and that's it's a good thing, I guess. It has a good vibe. And I like it. I was kind of worried that they would have a psychological collapse, and maybe it shows the difference in how much mental health has come along in the last 15 years, that the players were comfortable speaking to someone after the game, and they all sat down and had a chat about how they were feeling. And before they played their next match, they went to the scene of where it happened and talked about it. And things like that are really important, because you need to just get that out of your head. And when you compare it to how the Bolton players talked about what happened to Fabrice Muanda, and they didn't really talk about it afterwards. One of them was, I think it was Prattley, was saying he had to go and see someone later in his life because he kept having anxiety about it, that he was just going to collapse at any moment. And that's a really good thing, that we're not at the point where people just feel comfortable enough to open up about this when it happens. And I think that's probably been the major difference for Denmark, is because all of this isn't bottled up. They immediately got it out in the air. They dealt with it, and now they're back to playing football, and they can concentrate on it. And it's a really positive change, I guess, for the game.
Yeah, I dare say that in this crazy world with these crazy things happening, like Denmark and Copenhagen have seemed like the most rational place on earth during this tournament, given everything that's happened, how they dealt with the Eriksen stuff during and after it, and the aftermath of everything that's happened. It just seems like the nicest place to be right now. And I sincerely hope that we get to see more of them and more of the fans during the tournament. Any final thoughts, mate, before we head off?
No, I just wanted to add that the Russia goalkeeper trying to save Poulsen's goal is one of my favourite moments in the tournament. The sort of salmon-like flap that he did, it was just absolutely fantastic. It needs to be seen by everyone.
Well, it's fair to say that Russia didn't do much to dissuade your libelous comment in the pre-match about the open at the last World Cup. So that's a team that really needs an injection of new faces and new talent. I mean, that's a team that's been at the end of a cycle for about a decade now. So it's hard to see where the new players are coming from, but I don't think anybody will miss them in this tournament.
Yeah,
okay, thanks,
Stephen. Energy,
thanks, mate, and we'll catch up after the next round of games. Cheers.
Cheers, bye.